Okay, we are at the end of Shmuel Chavamis Shar Avodah Selikim. Namish at the end. The end of Shar Avodah Selikim, 10th parak. I just want to give a perspective here. In the evening shir, we have an evening shir in the Beis Medrash, Chavis Halvavis, 20 minutes a night. I actually moved over to study Shari Tshuva during Elul to learn, give a particular Yom Neroim focus. And I was wondering if I should do that here. The reason that I chose not to, part of the reason that I chose not to, is that the subject that we're actually in the middle of right now is the subject of getting our midas into the right place. Working on our midas, getting our midas into the right place. And we may say that that is very, very time appropriate. Meaning, if we were to choose a subject to study in Elul, this may have been the right subject to choose. But the understanding that our midas is one of the most fundamental areas of growth, of our function in this world, working on our midas, perfecting our midas, and it's certainly one of the things that should be at the top of our list when we are considering what efforts should we be making toward the great days of the Yom Neroim, toward Rosh Hashanah, toward Yom Kippur. What areas should we be seeking to improve? For every person, it's personal, it's subjective, but nevertheless, midas, we may say in a general way, should be toward the top of everybody's list. I'll also repeat what we've often said, B'Shem Rebbe Victor Miller, that if we were to boil growth down to try to define, how do you define growth, right? It's a very, very, aliyah, growth, shleimus. It's a very, very broad term. You say, okay, now I want to really put some efforts into my growth, so I have to choose from a menu of 1,001 things. So he, actually, from Chavis of Office, we studied this a while ago, boiled it down to headlines, headings. And one of them is perfection of midas, meaning one of the fundamental functions that we're here for in this world is to perfect our midas, even more than that. We've discussed this other times. I'm just recapping now to put it into this context, is that we were given faults for the purpose of being able to perfect them. The neshama is a perfect being. And Hashem gave each person his very particular limitations, his very particular difficulties when it comes to character, different people in different ways, sometimes in opposite ways, for the purpose of us going about polishing our neshama, refining our personalities. And therefore, we're continuing our discussion, this discussion all the way at the end of Shabbat, this or the Kim, of how to give each meat its proper application. But I'm going to say that at the same time, we are shifting to a subject very specifically appropriate for El, for approaching the Yom Neroim. We're shifting to the same subject we already studied. Okay. So now, in this last paragraph, okay, we saw last week, the Chen Shtei Midos. We're discussing now, just quickly move through what we saw last week and then move on, Be'ezus Hashem. The Chen Shtei Midos. There are two additional midas that you may have in you. Ha-Rachamim v'Achzorius. The midah of Rachamim and the midah of Achzorius. And as we've discussed, we're not defining good midas versus bad midas. We're working now with the premise that every midah has its place. What we call the better midas are the ones that are meant to be much more prevalent. What we call bad midas are the ones that should not be dominating our lives. But we want to learn where are they to be applied in order for them to turn into a good midah.
We're at the bottom of page 342 in the English.
342 in the English. Yashukayach. So the Chen Shtei Midas, HaRachamim v'Achzorius. How do we bring the midas of Rachamim and Achzorius, of mercy, empathy, versus callousness, insensitivity, and specifically not using the word cruelty for Al-Zarius, because cruelty has an absolute negative connotation. And what we're trying to do here is we understand that Al-Zarius, that cruelty is a bad midah. We understand that. But what we're trying to do here is figure out, okay, we want to move any of that cruelty out of our personality and apply it in the way that it's meant to be applied. So how does that work? So Mekayim HaRachamim, the place for mercy, the place for empathy, is for Al-Hadalim, Va'anim, Va'acholim, Va'aposhim in Oilam. It's for the poor, the sick, the needy. Now this seems obvious, but nevertheless, we want to stress that part of the midah of a Jew is not just helping out the needy, but it's actually feeling them, to really be able to feel their plight. This is part of our goal here. If I give tzedakah to somebody, I want to be able to sense what he's sensing. I want to be able to feel what he's feeling. It's a classic story about Rav Eliyachayim Leizels, the legendary Rav of Lodz, the great city of Lodz. He considered himself responsible to care for the poor, for the needy of the city. So one time he was going around collecting for a certain family, and he knocked at the home of one of the very wealthy residents of the city and came to the door. Okay, so some servant opened the door or something, and he asked, can you call the balabais to the door? Who's calling? He said, Lechaim Meisel is the Rav. Okay. Balabais heard that. He came running to the door, and he said, Rebbe, to what do I owe this honor? Please come in. It was a freezing winter night. So Lechaim told him, I'm here collecting for a needy family, and he started describing their plight at great length. And the balabais had come to the door in shirt sleeves. He didn't put on his coat to come to the door. It was a freezing, blustery night outside. And he's standing there in the door. Rabbi Lechaim was wearing a coat. He was going around outside. But the balabais was not. So he's standing there. He's starting to shiver. And he tells Rabbi Lechaim, come in, come in. We'll sit down inside and I'll hear what you have to say. Rabbi Lechaim was in the middle of his passionate delivery. He just kept going on. And this man had their inheritance for the Rav. They didn't want to interrupt him. So he waited another 2-3 minutes, hoping, okay, I'll go on for another minute, I'll call him in. But Rabbi Lechaim just continued, just kept on going on. Until finally the man is standing there, his whole body is shaking, and he's pleading with Rabbi Lechaim. He tries a few more times to interrupt him, but he's on fire. He's just going on and on. Until finally he said, Rebbe, please stop. Let's go inside and sit down. We'll sit down in the one. I'm cold here. So Rabbi Lechaim stopped and he said, I heard you the first time. He said, but I'm coming and trying to describe to you a family with small children that doesn't have money for firewood. It doesn't have money for heat. And you're sitting in your heated parlor. You have no idea what I'm talking about. Right? You understand it's not great to be cold. Every so often a draft comes into your house and it's uncomfortable. I wanted you to experience for 3 minutes what it means to really be freezing. Now consider the fact that there are little kids who are going through the night like that. Now I'm asking you to help me out with that family. So this is the idea. The idea is to really be able to experience what it is that the person is going through. And this will have a lot of different implications. If a person is really able to get not just to what is the person asking of me, and I want to stress, he's not talking about the midah of generosity here. There are two different midahs. There's a midah of rachamim, empathy, mercy. And there's a midah of nedivus. Nedivus is generosity. He's going to get to that later. When he talks about mercy on the poor, he's not talking about the midah of generosity right now. Obviously, the two are going to overlap very significantly, right? But that's not what he's discussing right now. He's talking about the midah of rachamim, of feeling for the person, of being able to sense what is the person opposite me feeling right now. So,
can I ask a question? So, collectors show up at your door, okay, and then you see the same people again and again, and you don't really know if their story is true or not, and they're very pushy, and you know, I say, well, I give my money to Kupishal Sadak and they sort out who really needs it. But I mean, I feel bad for the person because they're asking. So they can't be in such a good place that they're asking. But do they really need what they're asking for? Like, what's my response supposed to be? And when the repeats that come again and again and again, because never, I'm not finding myself dealing with them properly. That's the bottom line.
There's the question, a very, very common, legitimate, well-placed question. We have people who come to our door. We don't know exactly what their story is. Sometimes it might be an issue of who's better at telling a story. They may come again and again. And how do we deal with that? How do we deal with that in the right way? So on one hand, we'll say that this is really a question to ask in a more personal way. But on the other hand, we'll address it in a general way, understanding that here we're illustrating concepts. We're not laying down halacha lemaaseh right now. We're illustrating concepts. So let's just say like this. When it comes to tzedakah, you know, that might be where we do differentiate between generosity and racham. When it comes to tzedakah, the bulk of our tzedakah, we know how much money we want to be giving to tzedakah, how much money we should be giving to tzedakah. And there, be proactive about it. You decide which of the causes I feel I should be giving to. There are priorities in halacha around the neighborhood. There are plenty of ways of finding how to do good things with our money. And yes, we may say that the bulk of our tzedakah money should be in things that we're doing proactively. We know that this is an organization that I'm going to make good profits with them. Right? That my money is going to serve me well. If that's where my tzedakah money is going, they know what they're doing. They get to the right people, whether it's supportive Torah, whether it's supporting the poor, whether it's particular cases of poor people that you know about or other needs. Unfortunately, there are many of them. Unfortunately, we're living in a place that has a certain handle on it, and there are a lot of very worthy causes that we can give to. And then people come to your door. So what we might say is, that here, yes, let's differentiate between the midah of generosity and the midah of rachmanis. Have a certain amount that you allocate for people who come to the door, right? That's not where the bulk, it's not where the big sums of your tzedakah money have to be going, but you can decide on a certain amount of your tzedakah money that you are going to allocate for the people who come to the door. There's a concept in halacha called, it's actually a pasuk, al yoshev dach nichlam. The needy person shouldn't turn away ashamed. Shouldn't turn away ashamed, right? The person comes to the door, we want to greet him warmly, right? We want to greet him warmly. We want to express empathy. You give your small donation. Again, if you know the person, you know that it's worthy, you might want to give more. But when you don't know the person, but you, like you're saying, I want to feel for him. When you feel like you're pushed into giving a lot more than you feel is appropriate, then it's hard to do that with a good feeling, and it's also not necessarily what you should be doing. On the contrary, we might say that here's a place to say, no, my midah of nedivus, my midah of generosity, the generosity is going to go to the places where I know I want my money to go, where I know my money is going to achieve what I want to achieve in the best possible way. Here, I have certain amounts. Decide beforehand, I'm not going to state amounts, whether it's 1 shekel, 5 shekel, 10 shekel, whatever it is, and a giving at the door kind of amount that you can give happily, and when you give it, you can actually express empathy with the person and send them off with a good feeling. Starts pushing, on the contrary. This is where, it's another form of Avodas Amidas, to be able to smile and say something to the effect of, if you're just gonna feel like you're being bullied into giving more, you're gonna end up resentful. To be able to smile and say, I wish I could give more, this is what I could do now. But I really wish you hatzlach, and I'll be happy to see you again the next time. Or something like that. But to be firm, in order to be able to do it nicely, right? Think to yourself, I have X amount of people who are going to be knocking at my door. I want to be able to greet them all in a friendly way. In order to be able to do that, I have to decide that I'm giving X amount to each one, unless, again, there's a particular one who I happen to know about, whoever it is. And therefore, I'm going to do that. And if they get a little pushy, decide for yourself. On the contrary, this is a nisayan for me now to remain nice, empathetic, and firm, right? With the smile you say, I wish I could. I wish I could. I really wish you hatzlacha. I think that in general, that we'll call that broad guidelines. On an individual basis, it has to be maybe worked out more specifically. But does that answer the question in a general way? Okay. I'll give another example of this. Now, on the contrary, sometimes when a person gets pushy, the famous story about a gabbai tzedakah in Yerushalayim, I forgot what his name was, but one of the famed gabbai tzedakah of Yerushalayim. And just in order to illustrate the role, I'll throw out something that it's hard to do this story. Inside the story, okay, I don't think that's a big problem. But with the Beis Halevi, once on his Shabbos HaGadol drasha, I'll give a very, very fiery push for the Mois Chitin that he was collecting. He was trying to collect funds for the poor of the area for Pesach. And he gave a very, very passionate push for it. So when he came home, his wife said, "Do you think that it had the desired effect?" He said, "I was half successful. The poor were convinced that they should take. The others were convinced that they should give." So the truth, the Gabbai Tzedakah in Yerushalayim was often faced in this situation where they were, you know, they did these very limited funds and a lot to do with it. So somebody came, he knew this person really needed it, and I forgot if he had a very small amount or actually had nothing in the fund. Whatever it is, he told this person, "I'm sorry, I don't have a small amount," whatever it is. Basically, he was letting the person down. And this person got very, very upset. He said, "Do you know what's going on in my house?" I gave him a slap in the face. And this is someone who he had helped often in the past, right? Would have liked to help him now, right? You know, you knew him. Wasn't like, you know, he knew that he tries to help when he can. Gave him a slap in the face and stormed off. So what was this guy by Stucker's response? He went out and made an emergency collection in order to give this person more. And he explained, he said afterwards, this person obviously was feeling very desperate, right? I can take one of two approaches. He slapped me in the face. "You should never come to me again." Or he could say, "No, I'm going to connect to what he was feeling. What must he have been, if he did such a thing, what must he have been feeling? If that's what he was feeling, I'm going to go out of my way to put in the extra effort." This is what we'll call, it's too often where you see people are busy analyzing the Derech Eretz of the people who come collecting. And it might be true, the Derech Eretz, should they be doing it this way, should they be doing it that way, et cetera, et cetera. It might all be true. But you know what? The more fundamental Jewish attitude is, someone needs help. I want to be able to feel it. I want to be able to be doing what I can. Okay. So we saw last week Aparshim and Oilam. Again, what we said last week is that the Chavos Avos, just recapping briefly, I spend most of the time doing that. Okay. Was that the Chavos Avos is introducing a certain chiddush in Hashkafa. I don't know if it's a chiddush, I don't know if there's a novel point, it might be something. That when people, sometimes there's an attitude of, let's say a person took up a certain level of asceticism, etc., some sort of pious practice, and that now puts him into a more needy state. Now, people should not impose themselves on the tzibur. But on the other hand, there should also be an attitude of, if I see a person taking on certain pious practices, a certain pious lifestyle, that's going to make him more needy. So not to take an attitude of, "Well, look, that's what he chose. Why did he deserve my sympathy?" But on the contrary, if I do appreciate the values that he's doing, just said enough for me, if I appreciate the value of the lifestyle, then yes, he does deserve my sympathy. He does deserve my support. This is another point where rachamim is relevant. Also, we spent time on this last week, but just briefly, a person who does not know how to take care of himself. But then he continues, a person who doesn't know how to take care of himself. So there's a difference between the two. Really translates as a person who doesn't know how to get his good, how to look out for himself, what will benefit him. So as we said last week, the Mefarshim understand this to mean an application of rachamim as in admonishing, teaching other people when they're doing the wrong thing. Understand that that's another function of rachamim. We discussed this last week. It's a little bit different than the way it might be popularly perceived. Mind your own business. Sometimes, if you see a person doing something dangerous, and you say, "No, if I care for the other person, requires me now not to mind my own business, right? I see a different person's kid running out into the street, right? I go catch him. I bring him back to his parents, and I tell his parents, you know, your kid, when you leave him outside by himself, he'll often go running out into the street. I won't say mind your own business. Say thank you for caring. So the truth is that this will also be relevant to issues of halacha, issues of Yiddishkeit, where you might say, I care about this person. I want this person to be able to get to the best place in Olam Haba that he can. And therefore, this might be another reason to, in a very friendly way, tell a person who's talking in shul, you know, go over to him with a smile and say, why don't we save it for afterwards? Or different things along these lines, where a person might be getting himself in trouble spiritually. This is actually another function of rachamim. It's a skill. It has to be done right. But here the Chemes HaVavos is just giving us a little push against the current of Western thinking. That actually, yes, matters of value, matters of Yiddishkeit are also a place to apply the midah of rachamim when you see a person who needs that guidance. Okay. Okay, this is more simple and straightforward. A person who's mentally handicapped. A person who's mentally handicapped and doesn't know how to take care of himself. Whatever you can do to better his plight, whatever you can do to help make his life more pleasant, that's where the midah of rachamim applies. A prisoner. Here, it seems obvious to me that he's referring to a very specific halacha, which also brings out a whole added dimension of Yiddish sensitivities. A person who lost a lot of good. What does this mean? It seems to me that this is a direct reference to the halacha that's called Dei Machsira. So you have a person who is a multimillionaire. Right? And then this person suffers some very, very serious financial downfalls. And all of a sudden, he's not a multimillionaire anymore. He still has more money than me. And he's very, very downcast. You see, he comes to shul, he's very, very downcast. It's hard for me to feel sympathetic, right? He's still got a lot more than me, right? But now, halachically, this plays out a little differently. I'll explain how it works halachically. It's not exactly the same, but I'm bringing out the point, the sensitivity that the Torah wants us to have here. The answer is that it's not true. I've been used to living my life this way. I don't feel like I'm missing anything. Well, I might, you know, but it's not tragic when I wake up in the morning and I still have the same bank account as I've had for the last 10 years, right? Whereas a person who had been living on a much higher standard and suddenly loses it, yes, it's very painful. Now, you might say, so how to manage the way I manage? I've been living this way for years. Oh, but appreciate the fact that, no, you're not sympathizing with the lack per se, but you're sympathizing with the pain of the loss. That is a sensitivity that the Torah is trying to develop in us. When the Torah says that when you're caring for a needy person, you have to provide him with dei machsira, with his lack. Now, the example that I gave is not an issue of halach. Meaning, the halach is that I have a poor person who's coming to ask for tzedakah, and the officers of the tzedakah fund have to decide how much to give him. The halach is that he should be given as much tzedakah as he needs to get back to his previous standard. He should be given according to his previous standard. And that's the famous Gemara that talks about Hillel. Right? Hillel Azaken, that there was a very wealthy man who lost his fortune. And he used to have servants running in front of him. But he went through the street and apparently the tzedakah fund had enough money to get him a horse, but not enough money to get servants to run in front of him. And Hillel did that. Hillel ran in front of him announcing, here comes so-and-so. And this is illustrated as a fulfillment of the din of Dei Machsira. You have to give him according to standard, because we're not only talking about the material needs here. We're not talking about just making sure that he's not starving, making sure that he can live. But we're also talking about the compassion, the sensitivity to what the person is feeling. But now,
if that's an ideal, if there's not enough money in the tzedakah fund to go around, I don't see how you can meet such an ideal.
So the truth is, so first of all, I want to just make one point and then get to the point that you just raised. And that is that this is the din in tzedakah, meaning the halachic sense, let's say you have a person who had a billion and he lost an awful lot and now he's down to 10 million. So he comes knocking at the local tzedakah fund, right? So what's the din? Do you have to give him answers? You don't have to give him anything. Because it's a din in an ani. When a person makes the grade of an ani, how much are you supposed to give him? You're supposed to give him, I mean, once he reaches the grade of being qualified to ask for tzedakah, the question is, how much do you give him? You give him the amount that he would usually be used to. You're supposed to try to support him according to his previous life standard. So that's just one point that I want to make. It's step number one toward your question. But the lesson behind this mitzvah is relevant in that case also. Right? In the case of a person who did not quite drop to the grade of an ani, he still has. He only has a few measly millions, right? But the compassion, the sympathy is in place. Not to be looking at him, shkoyach, you're starting to approach the lifestyle that I've been living with since I was born. And you're feeling so lousy. Look at me, I have a good attitude, right? No. To be able to feel the compassion for a person who still has a lot more than I have, but he suffered a very great loss. Now, how does it work in practice? So obviously, unfortunately, the reality is, right, we're talking about it, ideally, the situation should be such as the Aruch HaShulchan talks about this, that an ideal state where the Jewish people are operating optimally, and therefore Hashem is responding in terms of material prosperity, providing them with an optimal existence. So a poor man is a very rare phenomenon. Poor man is a very, very rare phenomenon. Yeah, that there's a story in Yerushalayim. Somebody became poor, right? Very unusual kind of thing. So now the question is, how do we get together and be Mekayim in the mitzvah? No big deal. 10 of us get together, a million each, and we get him right back to where he was. That's in the ideal state, right? Where Dei Machsoyrei should have been something easier to be able to cover through the community. Today, the Tzareinu, we come back to what we talked about when we were talking about Tisha B'Av, to understand that our reality today, even in the material sense, is a reflection of the fact that we don't have the real presence of the Shekhinah among us, the effects of the presence of the Shekhinah among us, which manifested in the material level too. So we're all huffing and puffing to support ourselves, and we, because of the greatness of the Jewish people, we all make a point of pushing ourselves to give a very significant percentage of our income. But even when we do that, we still can barely cover the need, if we can, Bichlal. So here, of course, yes, there's going to be the inevitable need for the offices of the tzedakah funds, for people giving out tzedakah, to prioritize. And yeah, it will have to be spread thinner. What can we do? But we're talking about the ideal in terms of what the halacha is. And coming back to our subject, I'll give you an interesting example. This came up. Where there a certain Rebbe that had a large following, and he had to move for whatever reason. He moved to a different area, and people didn't know him as much. And he was used to every little Shabbos, he would make a tish, and he would have hundreds of people at that tish. And all of a sudden, comes to this area, and barely anybody knows him. And he had a very shvacha gathering at the tish, very feeble showing. So somebody asked one of the great poskim, is there an obligation to go to this person's tish because of the din of Dei Machsoyrei? You have to provide him, you have to provide according to the standards that he had lived by. So this poskim said, he enjoyed the chap. There's a very nice way of thinking, but he said, halachically, no. There's no obligation to do so because it comes back to what we said before. Dei Machsoyrei, in terms of the obligation, is a din of an ani. When a person is an ani who needs tzedakah, who qualifies for receiving tzedakah, we have a din of providing him according to his previous standard. This person is not an ani. It's true. We should sympathize. If you can go to his tish, give him a good feeling. Yeah, but in terms of the obligation doesn't apply. Okay. So that's mishapokat toiv rabo, a person who lost some great assets that we never had. Yes. he too is worthy of our sympathy. Look how, between all these different points, how the Torah is refining us, right? Trying to attune our sensitivities to so many different things where intuitively, from a little bit more of a naturally selfish perspective, I might say, why should I feel anything for this person, right? Another thing. A person who is weeping over his sins, a person who is afraid of Hashem's punishment, he has regret for the wrong things he's done in the past. This is another person who's deserving of our mercy. What this means is as follows. What this means is a person, let's say a person comes to bed, a person is taken to Bezdin. He's guilty of a certain avera that warrants a certain punishment. Malchus, or Chas v'Shalom, the death penalty. He comes, he shows his regret to Bezdin, he proves his sincerity, he'll never do it again. He shows his tshuva. Bezdin is not going to let him off the hook. Bezdin can't let him off the hook because where the Torah calls for din, the din has to be followed to a T. But we are not Bezdin. We're not Bezdin, right? A person comes to us, and for whatever way it might be relevant, the person regrets the wrong things he's done in the past, and he needs our help getting over it. He needs our help moving on. He needs our help fixing it up, rectifying it. So this is the approach to take. Well, you're an evil person. The things you did are horribly evil, and therefore you don't deserve my sympathies. We say no. Once you see that this person truly regrets it, and he's seeking out help, how to be able to move past it, we want to help him. We want to have rachmanis on him. There was a story, a very moving story with in one of the, there was a, I should stop the story from the end. There was a Sheva Brachas going on for Yeshiva Bachar, a very, very fine Yeshiva Bachar, married a fine girl. And this Bachar, at the same time of the Sheva Brachas, apparently at the Sheva Brachas, he made a Siyum, I don't know, like a very, very significant Siyum. And everyone was talking about his high level of learning. He was a high quality family. And the grandfather was there, very elderly man. And he was very, very emotional the whole time. Makes sense. Okay. But when he got up to speak, he said as follows. He said, I want to tell you a story. He said, back in Europe, he said, in the small town where I lived, there was a very, very mischievous kid. Very mischievous, extremely mischievous. This kid had a very, very good head, but his energy equaled and surpassed his mind, and he certainly didn't channel it in the right ways, and he was getting into anything and everything, and it was impossible for anybody to deal with him. And in the cheder, he gave his rabbis a real run for their money. And they tried this, they tried that, they tried punishments, they tried reward, they tried everything. There was no way to deal with this kid. Okay? Then, one day, they're learning in the local shul, and all of a sudden, some of the boys see that at the Aron Kodesh, the Pareches is moving. Pareches is moving. And all of a sudden, they hear a bleat, and out of the Pareches, out of the Aron Kodesh, comes jumping a goat. A goat comes jumping out, and all the kids start yelling and screaming, which makes the goat yell and scream, and the goat is jumping around between the tables and the boys, and the kids are running around. And, okay, it didn't take long to figure out how the goat got into the Aron Kodesh. This Hershala had put him in there, waiting to see the action. And the Rebbe decided, okay, this is it, this is it. This is the last straw. We can't have this kid in the cheder anymore. And get rid of him. And the Rosh HaKol agreed, like they had tried everything. And they told this kid, okay, that's it. You are not welcome in the cheder anymore. And at first he was defiant. Then he came back and started pleading for another chance. So now we gave you a million other chances, and that's it. He said, well, then I'm at least the man that you come with, that we go to the Rav of the town. The Rav of the town should paskin on this. They come to the Rav of the town, and he's pleading his case. The kid is pleading his case. And the Rav already knows the history, and he, like, feels very bad. But at the same time, he understands where the Rebbe's are coming from. And he says, yeah, with all of my goodwill, you know, that's it. You used all your chances. So the boy looks at the Rav and he says, maybe we should consult with somebody else too. Some other people. So Rav says, which other people do you want to consult with? He said, my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren. So they all look at him. And, you know, the Gabbayim are like, okay, here he goes again. And I want to hear what he's saying. And here the kid started crying. And the kid said, you're right. I blew all my opportunities. You're going to get rid of me now. What's going to happen? Where am I going to go? It's not going to take long before I'm going to become, I don't know what, right? And there's going to be no future for my generations. So you want to say that I deserve it? Say that I deserve it. But you're also deciding now what the fate of my children should be, what the fate of my grandchildren should be, what the fate of my great-grandchildren should be. You want to do that also now? Maybe you should judge that on its own. And Rav was taken aback, and everybody else stood there speechless, surprised that this should be coming out of the mouth of a young boy. And then he went ahead and he said, give me a month. And the Rav basically said, how can we say no to such a thing? And they gave him that month, and the boy, okay, apparently this already had shook him enough. He got himself back on the right track. I don't know if I could say that he sat like a statue through the shiur. I don't know exactly. Whatever it is, he got himself back on the right track. And this grandfather at that Sheva Brachos got up and said, that boy was me. And this chassan, that was the one I was talking about back then when I was saying, how are we going to decide his fate? So this is an example of what the Chavis Olamis is talking about. When a person is truly regretting things that he may have done in the past. Now, this is very relevant because sometimes there's a need to take measures. Sometimes, let's say there may be a need to expel a child from the school. Or things like that. But it's very, very important to differentiate between the need. Why do we need to do this? Not to move into getting back mode, right? Person should get what they deserve. But rather, what do we need to do in order to protect the other kids, etc.? But the Rachmanis should still remain. But here, the truth is, Chavis Olamis is talking about even more than that. Here's a person who wants to do tshuva. Person wants to do tshuva. The question is, what approach do we take? Once you've done such evil things, you don't deserve our sympathy anymore? Or no, once we see that the person really wants to turn over a different leaf, we want to be there and enable, facilitate that. Help him make it happen. Okay. We move on. Mekoma Achzorius. Where is the place for insensitivity, for cruelty?
Ruthlessness.
Ruthlessness. I guess everybody's trying to find a way to avoid the word cruelty, right? But, yeah, to just be mean, if you will, right? So, oh, by the way, I just thought something interesting. Achzorius. But it really is, the word really, if you look at the structure of the word, means not feeling the other person. Ach zar. The word breaks into two words. Ach zar. You are only strange, meaning you are foreign to the other person. Not a part of the other. His feelings are not a part of my feelings. He's him, I'm me, I don't feel. That's the term al-Ghazarius. Whatever the case is, yes, it means cruelty, it means ruthlessness, insensitivity. When it comes to bringing retribution upon the wicked, upon those who are causing ruination. And that is, the Torah imposes strong penalties on people who are threats to society. And Western values will tell you, a person is a serial killer, go easy on him, probably had a hard life, done the kafschus in all kinds of ways, etc., right? I don't know if it's a slap on the wrist. What happens, Lamaisa? That just encourages more serial killing. Everybody figures out why they had a hard life. And basically giving license, the way the Ramban puts it is, that, I forgot exactly his lashon, but where he says, and the Torah uses the terms a few times, do not have mercy in this situation, do not have mercy in this situation. When it comes to eliminating evil, we need to operate with ruthlessness in order to protect society. So therefore, yes, if Chalila, there's a murderer, the terror approaches, the murderer needs to be killed. The murderer needs to be killed, of course. There has to be a rigorous case in deciding that. It wasn't an easy procedure at all to kill a person who was deserving of the death penalty. But the terror does impose the death penalty with the understanding that, yes, you sometimes have to be very harsh in combating evil in order to protect others. And that's why, for example, right, you see David HaMelech in his wars, sometimes being mamish ruthless against the nations that he fought against. I'm not talking about in battle itself. I'm talking about after battle. After battle, he captured them. Why then does he have to execute them? Right? Why then is there... The answer is that David HaMelech had clarity of vision. He understood that his divine role is the protection of the Jewish people. The protection of the Jewish people means instilling fear in the nations around, that they should all be terrified of starting up with the Jewish people. If they know that they can come and attack the Jewish people, David HaMelech will fight back. In the worst case, he'll fight back, but then he'll be nice to us. He'll just let us go. No. He wanted to instill the understanding that anybody who's going to attack the Jewish people is going to suffer horribly. And at the time, he had to implement the Midah of Achzarius with the understanding that this is his role in ultimately being the great Rachman, being the person who is meant to care for the needs of the Jewish people, not allowed to compromise those needs by putting care and mercy where it's not warranted. Okay, there's another point here. Nekim and Amashchisim is a separate point, but okay, we'll stop here. We'll save this for next week in Mitzvah Hashem. Welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to you. Welcome to you. Kol tov. Thank you. I'm sorry?
Where were you
reading from? In the Chavis HaLavis, the end of Shal Avodah Sodikim, all the way at the end. It's mamish the last paragraph. Mamish the last paragraph.
Do you have the English translation or no? No. Oh, okay.